I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. This show is where we explore the questions shaping our communities, our economy, and our future, with people who bring experience, perspective, and sometimes very different points of view to the conversation. If you value these conversations, then I invite you to support this work. Your donations help us continue bringing together leaders and thinkers who are willing to have honest discussions about our state and our country. Visit lockedin.cash to become a reoccurring supporter. Your contribution helps us continue producing independent conversations that elevate our region. We spend a lot of our lives trying to create security. We build careers. We save money. We invest. We develop relationships. We make plans for tomorrow, and if we're fortunate enough, eventually, we accumulate enough resources to convince ourselves that we're going to be okay. But what happens when we begin trusting those things more than the source which they came? John Davenport calls that living from the lake instead of the river. He's the author of The River Principle, and today we're going to talk about self-reliance, money, hearing the voice of God, our desire for control, and what surrender actually means when life doesn't go according to plan. Hey, John, thank you for locking in with me. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, Brother Algernon.
Yeah, thank you for joining me, man. My audience would be unaware of this, but you and I go way, way, way back. I recall meeting you when I first got into business. I was a new and fresh member at the Piedmont Club. And one of the things that I used to enjoy the most about the club is they had these prayer breakfasts that you could come to. And I had the opportunity of coming to one. You were leading the breakfast. You were just really getting moving with starting your engineering firm. And I've told you this privately, but I'm also saying it publicly for the sake of my audience, that moment of meeting you and learning more about your business as I was going into business was hugely inspirational for me. And it's something that has stuck with me the 20 plus years that I've been in business. So I just want to say thank you for being here. Thank you for being such a great friend. And then for my audience that don't know you nearly as well as I do, they don't know about the business, the family man, the husband, the kids, all the community work that you've done. Just give them a little bit of an introduction on who John Davenport is.
Well, I'll try to do it shortly. First of all, as you mentioned, I do own a business. So I own the engineering business. It's based here in Winston-Salem. And next year will be 25 years, believe it or not, Algernon, that I've been running this business. Before that, I worked for the state of North Carolina for 10 years. I'm actually a native of Winston-Salem. I grew up here. We have raised our family. So I'm married and I've got 5 children. And we raised our family here in Winston. I have been involved with the community at various levels, some working with you and others just working in other parts of the community, different boards and associations. So I'm pretty much just a Winston-Salem guy. Other than the 7 years that I was in Raleigh, NC State, and a couple of years afterwards, I've spent most of my time here in this community.
And now you've added another role and title. You're now an author of the River Principles. So before we get into the book, and I've spent some time with the book, and I've got some really good questions for you today. But before we get into the book, talk a little bit about what inspired you to write it. And for someone that's totally unaware of the book, just maybe a quick digest of what the book is about.
So we all have life experiences, right? We all have things that happen to us. In my particular case, because of the way that things were arranged, I do believe that the Lord had his hand in that. I felt very led that I needed to just put it together in a story that people could digest. When you look at the individual chapters of your life, you don't really see how it all fits together. You're like, okay, well, this happened. This was a season. That happened. That was a season. But in the case of the book, what I felt led to do was to pull all those chapters together, if you will, and then you begin to see a principle that falls out of it, which is the river principle that we're going to talk about, where there's a clear indication of what God was leading me to do with my life. And without spoiling too many of your questions, I mean, that's how we got to that, taking life experiences and telling a story, which I think all of us live, a story, and we're all chapters in a big book. But in this case, my little chapter is a book that we're going to talk about called The.
No, I appreciate that. And it's strange. Yesterday, I was talking to a good friend of mine about a business idea that she and I might be pursuing together. And she asked me, she says, how do you know so much about this idea? Like, you seem to have it well put together. And I told her, yeah, because I've tried it like 3 times before and I failed all 3 times. And I said, but I haven't quite let the idea go. But it was remarkable as we were talking and I was thinking about the other times I've attempted the idea and mm-hmm. the times I failed, it actually dawned on me. I never failed at all. That all those moments are culminating together to create one big moment. And I think when you're in the middle of it, it's so difficult to really see it. There's a phrase that you use in the book, and I really like it. I've actually started using this. You talk about the difference of creating a lake or living by the river. And it's funny, as I see people nowadays, this phrase that you've introduced keeps coming back to me. And I can see people and I'm like, okay, that person's building a lake. And then I see people now and I'm like, okay, that's a person that's living by the river. When did you realize you were living from the lake instead of the river? And then just talk about the principle of creating a lake versus living by the river.
I was now just like a lot of people, and I would say most Americans, I was taught, all right, you gotta take care of yourself. You gotta do your thing. And so I started off doing that early. I mean, and for a lot of that, my thing didn't have anything to do with God. It was like, I'm going to do my thing. And even when I was considering myself walking with God, I'm doing still my thing. I want God to help me do my thing. And my thing is what probably most Americans want. You want to, like you said, you accumulate, you build, you put security in your life. And a lot of that for us as Americans, for me, was financial, right? I want to make sure I have money. So, I mean, I want to see how much I could save. I want to see how I can do this. And then also we have relationships that we put our security in. But the truth of the matter is if we feel like we have to have those things in place to have a good night's sleep, we've all of a sudden put our trust in it. Mm. What happened was, as life goes, some of those things begin to fail you. You begin to have a situation where the resources that you have aren't there, or the resources that you have can't fix the problems that you have. The relationships you thought you had that you could depend on are no longer there. And you really then begin to understand, I begin to understand, I'm looking to things that really are things that really cannot provide what I need in my darkest moments. And it was the darkest moments where I was able to really get a clear understanding of how much I was relying on some of the things that I had built into my life.
Yeah. And I think people that hear this conversation, they will see themselves in what you're saying. I know when you and I originally had this conversation at the coffee shop much earlier in the summer, I could see myself identifying in a lot of what you were talking about. But how do you find that fine line? Like there's to me, there has to be this fine line between being a responsible steward and then you just start depending on the lake. So how do you see that little fine line?
And so the fine line is the one word you just used, depend. Like, where am I going to trust? So for instance, if I have something come up in my life, and the first thing I think about as the line of defense is my bank account or my status or my relationships or all of those things above. And I don't think about the fact that those are actually tools and a gift that's given to me by the Creator. Then that's when I have crossed that line. Because the truth of the matter is that my bank account is a tool, but it may not be the tool that the Lord will use to deliver me from a situation. I mean, if you look at the biblical stories, sometimes the Lord parted the Red Sea. Sometimes you had to walk around Jericho. That seemed foolish. Sometimes they just had to pray. Sometimes he fought the battle and they just had to be quiet. Like God comes through in different ways. That's why they couldn't have a big, massive army, because it's like you're going to start trusting in it. And as soon as they got a big, massive army, I'm talking about the children of Israel, that's exactly what they did. They began to trust in their military strength, which was never going to deliver. And that's where we find ourselves as men and women. It's like we when we get prosperous, when we get strong, often that's when we feel like, well, I'm good now. But all it takes, what is one diagnosis, and all of a sudden that stuff is worthless.
Yeah. You know, when I was reading the book, especially in the early chapters, you talk a lot about your dad and, you know, the experience that you and him sort of went through in your childhood. And then later on, of course, as he became ill, as I read the words when you were talking about, like, that's your dad, I've never knew my dad. My audience is aware of that. Never knew my father day in my life, but I had this amazing, remarkable grandfather. That's the reason why I'm on this show having an intelligent conversation right now. And I'm not doing something else. But as I read about your father, I thought about my grandfather. And one of the things that was always really important to my grandfather was self-reliance. And it sounds like that was important to your dad. But what's, you know, John, what's wrong with just self-reliance?
So there's nothing wrong in the sense of I need to step up and do and be accountable. And I believe God expects us to do that. So if he gives you a gift, and we all have gifts. We may not think we do. I mean, if you're breathing, if you can walk, if you can talk, you've got a lot of gifts. It expects you to do something with those gifts. You have gifts. You should do something with them. So there's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with saying, I am not going to depend on people to make it happen. Right. Instead of wanting handouts. Like, you know, my dad was, you know, came up, fought in World War II. Very proud man because of that. And he was not about doing handouts. He did a good business and he earned a good living and he provided a good life for me, for my sister and myself and my mother. However, he never forgot how he got where he got there. And that's the difference is saying, when you look in the mirror at the end of the day and say, you know what, look what I did, versus saying, look what God helped me do. That's the difference in what one would say self-reliance and understanding that I couldn't have done all this. I could stand up and say all these things. How many times, Al, you know, have people tried to start a business and it doesn't work, right? There's way more people that's failed than have been successful, right?
For sure. And I think that the realization that I've come to is that, now, don't get me wrong. I mean, there was a point where I definitely thought I was creating everything and I was the one doing everything. Now I use a phrase called co-creation. I feel like God and I are partners and we're co-creating this reality together. And I'm certainly not doing it on my own. And I think what that has helped me to also see, you know, when you feel like you're creating everything on your own and you're totally self-reliant, responsibility can also become a burden. But I think when you know that you've got a partner and you're co-creating this reality together, responsibility doesn't feel so much like a burden at that point.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier, you said you've tried something three times and now you're going to go for it again. See, that's been my experience. Like the Lord let me do something and do it right to the letter. I did it just right and didn't work. And I do it just right and didn't work. And then he'll do it. And it's like, okay, well, just to show me, yeah, I'm going to breathe on it and I'm going to make it work. But you have to understand that was good for me to see that, okay, I busted my tail, I did what I'm supposed to do and it still didn't work. And then see him come through.
You know, when people think about depending on the lake, going back to your reference between the lake and the river, I think most people think about money. That's like the thing they think about the most, like people depend on money. But have you, as you've went through this experience and birthed this new book, what have you discovered that you were dependent on that was besides money?
One of the biggest things that I discovered that was a blind spot for me, because I had learned early on, okay, money's not going to do it. But I'm married, and I, like a lot of people, put marriage in a very high category. And I put my wife in a very high category. And in fact, I put my wife in the category that she couldn't live up to, and especially when she got sick. And so I didn't realize that one of the lakes that I had was depending on her voice, her support, her adoration, her approval for me to be the person I needed to be. if that makes any sense at all. Like when we meet that partner, a lot of times that's what we're looking for. They're my cheerleader. They're saying the things I need to say. They're all those things. And they're wonderful when they do it. But at the end of the day, our creator is the one that made us and has a future for us. And the minute I look to, whether it's my wife, whether it's my mother, whether it's my dad, whether it's friends, whoever, the approval of man, right, to give me my self-worth, then you got trouble. Because you know what? People are fickle. Even in their best moments, they may not be feeling you, right? And they may tell you that. And that's something that we have to get our minds around, is that, and we get frustrated because so-and-so didn't come through for me. Well, they're not designed to. You know, and God allowed me to experience that so that I could truly see that he was the only one that really would come through. Yes, I still value my relationship, but it's not in the same place as it was.
You know, my pastor has always said, wherever you believe that your blessings flow from will determine when it runs out. And I think that aligns very well with the river principle that you're writing about in your book. You said something a moment ago that I sort of struck me. You said one of my lakes, and I think from reading the book, I was only just thinking about like a single lake versus living by the principle. But I guess you're right. Like what you just said, people build multiple lakes, right? Like there's a lake for money, and there's a lake for relationships, and there's a lake for the job and the titles and all these things. But that does make a lot of sense. People do create multiple types of lakes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I chose to highlight money because in our culture, that's just the way we think. We don't like to admit it, but you and I both know as Americans is that we think money. We really do. And Jesus talks about that. And when he speaks about money and the love of money, we love money. We just have to be honest about it. And we see money as a solution to most problems. First question we're going to ask is, how much is it going to cost? That's just where we are. And I'm not saying that that's terrible, but it's just an observation of the society that we live in and the way we think. I'm driving down the road and I see a billboard, and I'm not going to get political, but it talks about the war in Iran. It doesn't talk about how many people died. What does it talk about? How much does it cost?
Yeah.
There you go. We all know how much it costs. We don't know how many Americans died. We don't know how many Iranians died. We know how much it cost, because that's what we care about.
No, I think that's a good observation. I money just touches so many things. I try to help like some of the young people that I mentor to remember that money isn't like this self-existing entity. It's just simply an expression of your own value. So if you're an engineer like yourself and you bring a lot of value to the table and you understand business and you know how to do business, that's a lot of internal value inside of you, and then that's going to get expressed through the money that you make. But I think so often, especially Americans, we focus on money being an external thing. We don't realize that it's just something that is flowing from inside of us based on the energy that we put out. You know, so you talk a lot about God throughout the book. Even in our conversations, you know, both you and I talk a lot about God. Here's a question that I often get from some younger members of my audience. How do you actually know that you're hearing from God? Like, how do you actually know that you're being directed by God?
So that's a very good question, Algernon. And when I tell people, I work with people that are young in the faith. They may not be young, but young in the faith, is that learning how to understand the voice of God is one small step of obedience at a time, right? So you don't just start off and, okay, I heard God, because I miss God. You miss God. I hear things every once in a while. I think this is God, but it may not be. What I've learned over the years is that it's the step of obedience, and that obedience generally is going to come from something that he's already said in his word, right? It's not Algernon comes up to me and says, this is what God tells you to do. Like we have the Bible. We read the word. There's a principle in there that God says, this is what I want you to do. You decide, am I going to respond to this in faith, or am I going to not do that? It is at that level that you're going to be communicating with God. Because the minute you say, I'm not going to do that, okay, then it may be a little bit more difficult to hear other things, because it's like, Algernon, how do I listen to you and say, I'm going to listen to you about this, but I'm going to ignore you that in the same conversation. Like that's tough. And I think as people, what happens is we'll get something and we'll grow in God, like God speaking to us. But a lot of times if we don't hear what we want to hear, it could be a simple conviction. Instead of dealing with that and saying, you know what, you're right, Lord, I'm wrong. I don't want to talk about it. Right. And I'm not talking about some big heinous sin. It could be anything. Right. But the minute we start not listening to what we believe is God guiding us, it makes it more difficult to hear on the larger scale things when it's time. Right. And so,
yeah, so often
it's really obedience. It really comes down to small acts of obedience.
Yeah, so often, John, I think we are driven by like what we desire most, like mm-hmm. you just said. Sometimes if it's not what we want to hear, a lot of times humans are driven by fear, driven by their own ego. So whatever it is that they're just trying to create for themselves. You know, as a consultant, I'm oftentimes hired by clients to give them advice on certain deals and transactions and opportunities. And I find overwhelmingly that people are just paying me to tell them what they want to hear. And if I tell them what they don't want to hear, you know, they're ready to let me go because I'm not going along with whatever it is that they want to do. So a lot of times people are just looking for some kind of affirmation. They're not really looking for any true guidance or advice. They just want whatever their own desires to be affirmed. Tell me a story about a time. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going.
No. Go ahead.
Well, the truth of the matter is, it's like getting to hear the voice of God is just like me understanding what you sound like. I was not like, I spend time with you. We sat down, we had coffee. I've talked to you over the years. If the phone rings and you call me, I recognize your voice. And I think a lot of times we want to treat God as if he's the help desk, right? So if you're talking to the help desk, you call someone on the help desk, you don't really care who it is as long as they give you the help you want, right? That's not a relationship. That's just a consumer. Like, give me what I need and I'm going to hang up the phone and thank you. Hearing the voice of God is spending time with him, which is I refer to spending time in his word. So I just want to make sure I clarify that because it is about a relationship. It isn't about just give me an instruction. He's not ChatGPT. Like, he really wants to have time with you as an individual. So let me go on to your question.
No, thank you for adding that because I think that's a great analogy, but you're right. I mean, my deacon in Sunday school, I can remember this when I was younger, he used to always say, God doesn't want to date you. God wants to get married with you. God wants to really, really be with you. He wants to have a really strong relationship with you. Yeah. So I was curious. Tell me a story about a time you've been in business. You've done so many things throughout your career and your life. And I mean, we're only really touching a small degree of it today, talking about your book. And I encourage my audience, go out and learn more about John Davenport. Like I said, really successful business guy, has done some really great work, not only here in the States, but really around the world. So please go out and learn more about him. Tell me about a time that maybe you were certain that God was telling you something and then discovered that you were wrong.
All right, let me do some processing.
That's the engineer in you.
No, I want to find an example where I was wrong. Okay. I'll explain it like this. And this is probably one that you walked with me through. Okay. So there was a season that I actually was involved with politics. And I was actually on an elected board. And what I did was, by getting there and understanding this is God that got me there, I translated that into, okay, if I'm going to run for office, i.e. follow what I believe God wants me to do, that means that there's success. So that's kind of where I missed God early on in my career. And still, even now, like, because God says go this direction does not mean that equals you're going to get what you think you're going to get. Right? And so I thought, all right, so I'm supposed to be here. So I'm supposed to run. So I'm supposed to do this, and that means that I'm going to win, and I'm going to do this, that, and the other. He didn't say all that. All he said is, I want you to do this. But I added the rest of the narrative because it felt good, right? And I'm not trying to say that flippantly, but it just, you know, if God says go start a business, you think, well, that means it's going to work. That does not necessarily mean that. That means go start a business and trust me on the results. And in fact, in that situation, it didn't work the way I thought it was going to work, but it was exactly what he planned. And I had to reconcile that, but I had to learn that was difficult to say, well, God, but this is what you asked me to do, and you did it. You did what I asked you to do. Yeah, but it didn't work the way I thought it would work. Well, but I got you. Like, I took care of you. Okay, so I had to just really understand, do I trust him or do I have to see the results of things going my way? I think you put that in a quote somewhere, but things don't have to go my way for me to trust him.
You know, I think what you're describing is it's very difficult for humans to have uncertainty. And when you think about going back to this lake and river principle, I'm telling you that when I read that in the book, I was like, man, this is a great way to sort of put it so that people can see it, a clear image in your mind of the difference. So when you have a lake, you have certainty. Like you know the boundaries, you know what's in it, you know how much water you got in it. You might even know how much fish you got in it. When you have a river, there's not as much certainty. I mean, there's a lot of things going on. There's parts where the river gets narrower and it gets wider. I mean, there's a lot happening. How do you battle the uncertainty of living that way?
You know, one of the hard things, even for me now, is not knowing the outcome. I've got situations right now where I would like to know how God's going to fix it. I have to go back and look at what has God done for me in the past. And will he come through for me again? And that is the certainty that I can rest on. Not how this situation is specifically going to work out, but the fact that he's promised me he's going to come through for me. And I can't find a time in all these years I've lived that he hasn't ultimately come through for me. That's where the certainty comes from. I can tell you times when my legs haven't come through for me, but I can't tell you a time when he did not ultimately come through me. Not always the way that I wanted it, but always in a way that it was clear he came through.
I think that's remarkable. I'm sitting here reflecting on it as you say it, because that's so true. I mean, that's true in my own life. Like, even as I'm just through the quick reflection I did as you were even saying it, and I don't know what it is about us as humans. We forget that easily. Like, we forget that, okay, man, you were just in trouble 6 months ago.
Yeah.
and some kind of way you got through it. And then you're back in a situation, whatever that situation is, and that looks different for everybody. But it's almost like you forget that, hey, you just got pulled through before. I mean, has there ever been a point where you started to question, is the river even there? I mean, have you is the river even still there for you?
Yes, there in some of the darkest moments that I highlight in that book, there was a season where, especially with my wife and how sick she was and where our relationship was at that time, I was like, I don't know, Lord, how you're going to ever come through in this area. And I have gone to as far as I can in my faith walk on this thing. I can't see any further. And I remember picturing myself stepping up to a ledge, almost like if you've ever been in the Grand Canyon, you can't get to the edge, right? Because they got stuff to keep you from getting there. I got to the edge of this big abyss and I'm like, okay, Lord, either you catch me or I'm done. And that was literally being at the end of myself. Like, I had thrown all the faith, all the prayers, all the everything I could at that situation. And I'm like, and I don't see this getting any better. This is not getting better. And so I'm getting ready to step. And if you don't catch me, I'm falling. And he did.
That's powerful.
But I got there. I mean, I literally got there. And I wish I could say that, oh, no, I was good. God got it. No, I mean, I was like, no. I mean, I'm sitting there saying, this is one that if you don't move, I'm just not going any further. I've done everything I'm going to do. I probably didn't have the best attitude. I'm sure I didn't have the best attitude. Which is one thing that's wonderful, that we have a gracious God that accepts all of our garbage, because he didn't have to listen to all that, but he did. And he came through.
You know, I think for a lot of people, and as I listen to you tell that story, I think when you're getting the answer no from God, that it becomes so much more difficult to surrender, because you're not getting the answer that you want. But what does that look like, John, in like practical life? I mean, obviously you were in a situation where, you know, your spouse, the person that's closest to you in life, is going through a really troubling time. You're praying to God, you're praying, but you're getting either no answer or you're getting no. Like, how do you stay in a surrender posture when that's happening?
It was tough. But at that point, all the other pillars had been knocked away, the things, the lakes that I talked about. And so I had to decide, all right, where are you going to go? Like, what are you going to trust in? If God really, I had to really decide. And I said this in one of the short little documentaries that someone did about this story. I'm like, I had to decide, what if God just doesn't do this? What if he doesn't fix it? Is he still God? Like, what if he doesn't? Does he, you know, does that mean all of a sudden that everything that I believed in, everything I've trusted in, is now irrelevant because he didn't do this one thing that I think he ought to do?
With everything,
am I willing to leave a relationship that I espouse to say I want to have this? We talk about, oh, when we die, we're going to be with the Lord. I mean, I'm willing to say, all right, I'm going to throw all that away because you didn't do what I said I thought you were going to do for me. Where are you going to go? That's like being on an airplane and saying, I'm tired of flying on this plane. I'm getting off right here. Like, woof. All right. What is that? You can get sucked out the window. You're going to die in an abyss. You have no, I mean, to me, that was the way it felt. Like, you really have no real choice. You do, of course. You could get sucked out of the abyss, but that is exactly what would happen at that stage if you decided, well, I'm just gone.
I mentioned at the outset of our conversation, I've been friends with you for a long time. I've known you for a long time. So I also know that you're someone that is constantly expanding, constantly trying to get better, constantly trying to improve and grow. So now that you've reached this point, what else, what's next for you? What else do you feel like you need to be working towards surrendering?
My time is something that I've continued to learn. Because as you get older, Algernon, you realize, I don't have a lot of time. And when you're younger, you think, oh, I got time. We can go hang out. Now it's like everything's on the calendar. I got to schedule my workouts. I got to schedule my rest. And so now time, if I'm not careful, can become a lake, right? I'm dependent on a schedule that works for me and everything. So now I've got to be like, all right, you know, if God wants to do this, you got to let go of that time. You got to be willing to have that interview with Algernon. You got to be willing to do the different things that may be what you might consider inconvenient, but they're what God wants to do with your time because he owns your time, right? But that's just not always easy because, again, I can earn more money, right? I can always earn more money, but I cannot put a single second at the end of my life.
Yeah, I tell people all the time, if I could take everything I know, like right now, you could freeze it, but I could go back 20 years and I'd be like, I'd only have a dollar. I'd still do that deal. Because the time is, you definitely come to a place where you start recognizing the time has far more value than anything. Cause if you got time, you got space to maneuver. Yeah. And I'm glad you did the interview too, cause I'm certain, well, one, your book has already touched me. So you've already got one here, but I'm certain my audience, we'll get a lot out of this conversation. You never know when your testimony is going to sow a seed in someone else's life. I think so oftentimes our story and our purpose in life is not really for us. It's probably for people that you might never know. I mean, it may be someone that hears this conversation, you never know them, never see their face, never know their name, but they go out and buy your book and it changes their life. Here's one of my last questions for you, because I am hoping that my audience takes this serious and go find the book and purchase the book and read it. How can someone start to identify the lakes in their own life?
You know, I think that it's fairly easy. If you think about there's something in your life that you cannot live without. Like if for some reason that went away, I just don't think I could live. Probably a lake.
That's going to be a tough one for John. I can just see people hearing this and thinking, man, I can't live without my spouse, or I can't live without my kids. That's a tough thing to get your mind wrapped around.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Saying I don't want to lose my kids and I don't want to lose my spouse, that's different than saying I can't live without.
Yeah, it's that attachment. Yeah.
You know, because it's that connection. Because you may have to. I pray that you don't have to be faced with that, but you may have to, and then you have to figure out, what am I going to do? Does that make sense?
It makes total sense to me. I mean, I think it's just the uncertainty of life. I think what causes us to suffer as humans is we get attached to things. And those things are constantly changing. You know, things are constantly evolving, but that attachment's there. And it can lead to a lot of suffering. And you obviously quantify that by creating lakes versus by living by the river. And I think that's so important to bring out. Here is my absolute last question. I ask this question to every guest because I'm a huge, huge supporter of our local food and beverage community. You're a Winston guy. You've been around town your entire life, except when you went off to school. But what's one restaurant you recommend in your hometown?
Oh, boy. Well, there's
the toughest question of the whole conversation.
Yeah, because you're going to put me on the spot and I have to try to pick one now. You know, I would have said a few years ago, it would have been Sweet Potatoes. When I brought people in town, I'd like to take them to Sweet Potatoes because I was just so proud of what they did and what that represented. And I just thought it was a cool atmosphere there. They're not there anymore. I honestly don't do a lot of eating out. I would say that you can't go wrong with Ryan's or Village Tavern or some of those other places like that. But there are also some places that are that you can get some good local stuff, like the Fasaya Seafood. You know, I really enjoy their, you know, the calabash type shrimp and everything. That's kind of what I grew up with. You know, I grew up, I mean, from East Winston like you. Ryan's has been there forever. I had to get, you know, north of 40 years old before I could even afford to go to Ryan's, you know. So I didn't know they were there. My wife was like, yeah, they're right over there. I'm like, I don't know what that place was. I can't go there. But I did a lot of Mayflower and Fasaya Seafood and places like that were good too. And so, yeah, anyway, I hope I answered that quick. Cranky's, in my opinion, has some of the best coffee, but also By Good is really good as well. And I'm a coffee snob, so I enjoy coffee. So it's got to be a certain kind of way.
So. Yeah, no, I think Daryl at By Good and him and Abby, they do a terrific job. I always say this is the toughest question of the conversation, and I deliberately ask, like, what's one restaurant? Because I know it's just almost impossible to name one. And that's the politician in you. You're filibustering a little bit to make to make sure you get everybody in there. But no, we definitely miss Chef Stephanie.
And everything on that one. I'm not going to get alienated on that one. Have somebody hitting me up. Be like, what do you mean?
Now, we miss Chef Stephanie over at Sweet Potatoes for sure. I actually got a chance to see her last week, and we're talking about maybe doing some pop-ups with her this holiday season. So maybe trying to bring that menu back. That'll be fun. Small fun fact for my audience about Ryan's. One of my first restaurant jobs was at Ryan's. I was the busboy there when I was 17 years old. And I would go around. That place is so magical on the inside, especially for a 17-year-old. And, you know, really, really all the community leaders and the elected officials, they all eat there. And I would be cleaning up and bussing tables. And John, I would constantly tell myself whenever I would work, I would always say, one day I'm going to be in here eating dinner. and sure enough, I finally made it to Ryan's. But this has been another episode of Locked In with Algina and Cash. John's River Principle challenges us to examine the difference between using the resources available to us and making those resources the source of our security. And perhaps the real test comes when the outcome isn't what we wanted. Can we remain connected to something deeper even then? My thanks to John Davenport for joining me. If you value these conversations, then I invite you to support this work. Visit LockedIn.cash to become a reoccurring supporter. Your contribution helps us continue producing independent conversations that elevate our thinking. You can also subscribe to my podcast on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. Share this episode and send it to a friend. I'm Algernon Cash. Stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.